Now, I'm very, very excited about our next guest. Rob Law is a business leader who has defied extraordinary personal and professional odds to achieve success. In the wake of being one of the most famous rejections on BBC's Dragon's Den, he successfully pioneered Trunky. Do you remember the Trunky? The brand behind the much-loved ride-on suitcase for tots. Since its launch in May 2006, the company has won over 120 awards, including the National Business Awards SME of the Year. Rob has also received an MBE for services to business. Now, if that wasn't enough, Rob was born with cystic fibrosis and is now a Cystic Fibrosis Trust patron and an inspiration to many people living with this life-threatening illness. He's got a book. It's out now. It's a must-read. It's called 65 Roses and a Trunky. And Rob Law joins me. Rob, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, what a treat and a privilege and an honour. Can I speak on behalf of all airport users that I just want to thank you for the Trunky? Because whether or not I've got my kids, the fact is that everybody else's kids are happy and content and are able to have a sit down thanks to your great invention. So actually, the Trunky is great for families, but actually it's great for everyone.
Well, thanks for those kind words. Certainly the kids enjoy them, although I do get a few feedback comments of my own from international business travellers who complain about sore ankles. But
oh, listen, by the way, how many times you'd be a millionaire all over again for every pound that you've been told that when is there going to be a Trunky for us grown-ups?
Well, actually, Mark, talking about it, maybe I should have padded ankle cuffs for international business travellers.
Now you're talking. That I'm in. Don't worry about Deborah Meaden or Peter Jones. You can have my money, what little there is. Now, Rob, let's start with your first great challenge in life. You were born with cystic fibrosis. It's often referred to as 65 Roses, hence the title of your brilliant book, your memoir. Can you tell us about this illness and how it affected your early life?
Yeah, well, as a child, quite often children struggle with the pronunciation of cystic fibrosis. They call it 65 roses, which is where the title came from. But growing up, I guess I knew no better, really. Although I have had to and still have to take a lot of medication and do physiotherapy, it is my normal. But whenever I try to seek self-pity from my parents, especially my mother, she always used to tell me that people were worse off than me. So that road was shut down from an early age. And I think actually in hindsight, that's been very beneficial to keep me focused on the things I can control and not worry too much about the things I can't.
Indeed. I mean, without, you know, going into too much detail and ultimately, you know, if I'm being impertinent, please say, Rob, but what sort of symptoms did you encounter growing up as a result of this illness?
Well, cystic fibrosis basically affects the salt balance in your body, which means my lungs can get clogged quite easily. My pancreas doesn't work, so I can't digest fat. And it also has some problems for people in later life. So, I was told I couldn't father children. Up until the age of 8, I couldn't eat any fat. So I'd never tasted a chip or a crisp or even proper chocolate. It was just carob and Edam for me. So that was a challenge. But then a new pill came along and all of a sudden overnight, I could eat full fat, which took a bit of getting used to. But I do like to go to bed with a cheese board these days.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Of course. Was it quite a magical moment when you finally got the taste for real fatty food?
But it took a while to get that taste. Absolutely.
Was it unpleasant at first, ironically?
Well, it was just tasting something very different to something you hadn't tasted before. It took a bit of time to get used to it, but love my fish and chips now. That was the slightly easier thing to deal with, although obviously there were challenges with going to the toilet. So the lungs are the real problem and the life-threatening part. And sadly, when my sister, I was born a twin and she had cystic fibrosis, Kate, she got ill from a fairly young age, about 4, and the disease really took hold of her lungs. She went on to have a heart and lung transplant when she was 15, which gave her a new lease of life. But sadly, she passed when we were 16.
Yes, I know. You write about this very movingly in the book. So you lost your twin sister, and you were given a prognosis by doctors that you wouldn't see much beyond your 20s. And of course, with the same DNA and very similar physiology to your sister, you can't have been very optimistic about your life chances.
Well, I think I'm a natural problem solver, and my life, my passion I found is product design and creativity. So faced with that hugely traumatic experience, not just for myself, but my family, but I kind of realized that I had two options. I was at a junction, and I could either wallow in self-pity and wait to succumb to this disease and an early death, or I could choose life and try and make the most of my limited time on the planet. And unfortunately, I'm 42, soon to be 43, so I've succeeded in getting past the 20s.
A very energetic and youthful 42, 43 by the sounds of it. I mean, how did you, do you think, manage to defy medical expectation? I mean, did you become your own doctor? Did you start sort of just buying a load of medical textbooks and researching into the condition? Or was it your mental approach and your positive attitude that helped?
I think positivity absolutely helps, and sport really helped for me. So I got running from an early age. All my mates played all the team sports, and I tried to, but I'm not so skilled at football or cricket. So I found myself running a lot, cycling a lot, and swimming a lot. And I really struggled when I started the business in startup phase. So much time and energy goes into building the business that my health had to take a bit of a back seat, and long flights to China and to America, that didn't really help either. So I decided I need to fix a goal each year, a sporting goal. So I'd start off running a half marathon, then next year it was three half marathons in a month, then Land's End to John O'Groats on the bike, and then I discovered triathlon. So I put all those together and started doing Olympic distance and then half Ironmans. So that's kind of been one of the key survival tactics I've used to try and stay as healthy as I can.
And that's remarkable. And I suppose the idea is that you have tried to give your body every chance to fight the symptoms of this illness and to make your body this lean, mean machine.
Well, middle age is starting to show something around the midriff, but it used to be.
I'm sure it's all ab muscle. I it's an extraordinary story, and it's obviously a must read. It's moving and inspirational in equal measure. Have you always had an entrepreneurial spirit, Rob?
Well, I always just wanted to be a designer from a very early age. I guess being aware of my condition, I knew I couldn't be an astronaut as a child, although I was using my Lego kits, and I couldn't be a soldier, and all those childhood dreams. And I think on reflection, it's kind of, I had to man up and figure out what I was going to do a lot earlier than most. And I fortunately discovered that I was quite creative. I was also dyslexic at school, so quite a few other subjects just didn't fit with me. And I found myself always using my hands. And I discovered this lesser known, very popular topic called product design, but it was very, wasn't very well known about 30 odd years ago. And I just completely captured my attention designing consumer products. So at the age of 14, I decided that's what I was going to do. And I went to did everything I needed to do to get on the best course at the time, which was Northumbria University, where Jonathan Ives of Apple fame studied.
Amazing. The designer of the iPod and the iPhone and other such iconic devices, although you followed nicely in his footsteps. Any notable early creations before you came up with the Trunky suitcase?
let's see, what did I do? I created a recumbent bike for my A-level design project. I created a whole range of furniture.
What kind of bike was that, Rob?
A recumbent bike.
So now, what is a recumbent bike?
It's one of those bikes that you sit down to pedal. So,
blimey.
I was hugely inspired by bike. You remember Chris Boardman riding the Lotus bike in the 92 Olympics. So I thought that was the best thing ever, and had pictures of that on my wall instead of Lamborghinis. And And recumbent bikes are actually a lot more aerodynamic and they use the leg muscles in a more efficient way. So in theory, they're faster than them.
And maybe engaging those abs of yours and the lower back muscles.
Yeah, although my attempt at a recumbent certainly wasn't that fast, but yeah, it was a good project to do.
So product design. So actually, yeah, that's really interesting. Similarly, you mentioned Joni Ive, Steve Jobs, of course. They were all about the product and getting the product exactly right, completely fastidious about detail. So tell us about the Trunky, how that came about. Was it a happy accident or did you just conceive it in one moment of inspiration?
Probably the latter. So a second year design student up in Northumbria, there was a national luggage design competition. So we entered that and I went along to the local department store, Fenwick's in Eldon Square, for those who are familiar with Newcastle. And I was there looking at the adult luggage selection and lots of black and brown suitcases. But I did notice that the hard molded suitcases, there was a big trend for plastic molded suitcases back then. Yeah. But they're black and boring and kind of drifted off into the kids' toy section. I remember stood looking at the ride-on toys and remembering my younger brother would ride his ride-on tracks around the garden relentlessly and just thought, well, actually, this technology used to make these is waste a lot of space. Why not use this technology that's now adopted by the luggage companies to make a ride-on toy so you maximise that space but still sculpt it and create it so that a child can sit on it and have some fun riding it. And that was when the idea was born, back in 1997.
Well, it's a genius idea. And I personally, as a father of two boys and watched them growing up and traveling with them to places like Italy and Austria, where their mum's family are from. And actually, the notion of children having their own suitcase is a really good developmental thing for them to do, because they have to be creative about what goes into that suitcase and work out how many pairs of shorts they're going to need, etc. And their bear and maybe a small small bar of chocolate. So it's actually quite a nice notion. It wasn't a given before the Trunky that a child would actually have luggage, was it?
No, when I finally got the product to market, they were just cheap trolley bags with different brands slapped on, different brand Disney brands. And it was kind of a product that became commoditized and had no innovation and was just selling on price. So but when I, after I won this competition, the judges took me aside and said, you know what, Robbie, you've got quite a commercial idea here. You should try and license it. And I thought, brilliant, yeah, my first journey into business. So I approached a luggage company in the UK called Carlton and told them we're going to revolutionise family travel together and showed them my prototype and all my research. And they very politely told me that I had invented a toy and not a suitcase, so I should go and see a toy company. I then went off and talked to toy companies and they said the reverse. They told me I'd invented a piece of luggage. So it took quite a long time to get the product to market. And on the 5th of May 2006, the first container of Terence and Trixie's, the pink and blue Trunkies, arrived and I was able to start trading.
Extraordinary. So take us a few years ahead now and we see you on Dragon's Den on BBC Two. What kind of shape was the business in when you entered the den?
Well, it's 2 weeks after that first container arrived. So I just quit my job as a design consultant so I could work full time on Trunky. Now I had some stock to sell. I had a purchase order from the Museum of Modern Art in New York in my hand when I went into the den. So I was really excited. I needed money, I needed mentoring, and I needed some marketing.
So, I mean, this is interesting because there are two ways to do Dragon's Den, aren't there, Rob? You either go into it having already made quite a bit of money and you've got this wonderful balance sheet to show Peter Jones. And at that point, it's like a bidding war because you've proved you have a successful business. And then the other way to do it is just an amazing idea that has potential but hasn't made a penny yet. So clearly you fall into the latter category. And therefore, that's a harder sell on a show like Dragon's Den, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Although I did have a final production product that had shipped at my feet. So I went up those stairs, stood in front of the dragons, and it's just like on the telly, apart from a foot or two in front of your sofa. It is exactly like that, all five of them lined up, looking at you very cautiously. And yeah, the pitch went perfectly. This was season three, so Richard Farley, the Aussie with the floppy hair, was on, and he was my target because he had toddlers. So I told him that you still need trunkies to, even if you're traveling on a private jet, towed him around the studio, and everything was going beautifully until Theo got hold of Trixie, the pink trunkie, and maybe he was a bit jealous because I didn't tow him round, but he started tugging at a tow strap and ended up popping it off in his hand. And that was the breaking point.
This is unfortunate. What happened? This was clearly a prototype suitcase and therefore perhaps unfair to judge.
It was the production... full production version that was strong enough to pull Richard Farley around the studio. Just not strong enough for Theo to pull off.
Now, what do you think? Did you overestimate the engineering potential of the trunkie, or do you think you might've just been unlucky and had a bad prototype?
It's probably a bit of bad luck. It was strong enough to pull an adult round, enough for the Theo test. And the problem was, it was so easy to fix. Let's just mold that hook in a stronger plastic. Literally take overnight we can fix that, but the Dragons just didn't want to hear that. They just lambasted me. Peter Jones told me my business was worthless. Deborah Meaden said I don't see the business opportunity. Theo was just breathing fire, and all the Dragons went out apart from Richard, who got the product because he had toddlers and he understood it, but he saw he had a great opportunity to ask me for an awful lot of my company. So I asked for £100,000 for 10%, but he was offering me 50%, £100,000 for half my company. And that was just a far too big a gap.
Well, indeed, considering how much success you've had, then he would have made a lot of money for not too much input. Now, the experience itself, first of all, in the run-up to your television appearance, I mean, you're sat in a green room, you're waiting to go on. Were you nervous?
Yeah, very nervous. I'd rehearsed the numbers. I knew the Dragons like their numbers, so I got the numbers right. And, the trunkies calmed me down that I took up there, and I was on good form when I finally landed in front of them. Although I do have to admit, I was wearing a brown suit, which, if you recall back in the days of 2006, was the height of fashion.
What kind of suit?
A brown suit.
A brown? Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. I mean, are you kidding? You're clearly a clothes horse as well as a great entrepreneur and inventor, Rob. Now, was it a bruising experience? Because surely you've trudged off the set of Dragon's Den thinking, that's it, my dream is over.
Well, yeah, I left literally empty handed because I did sell Richard my two trunkies that I took on the show. I gave him a Dragon's Den discount. And then left, and his wife posted me a Coutts check from Monaco a few weeks later.
Oh, wow.
But walking down those stairs, I just remember thinking, oh, my God, I wish I'd invented a time machine and not a ride-on suitcase. I mean, this is going to really play great TV, but not in my favour.
Did the exposure help you on your journey to success? Was it one of those situations that on paper looked like a disaster but was in fact a great disguised opportunity?
Well, yeah, 6 months later, I was in the local news agents picking up the Radio Times, trying to find out when I was going to be on BBC Two, Tuesday, 9 p.m, Wheelie Rubbish. So the BBC advertised the episode as Wheelie Rubbish. I knew it was going to be bad. I thought, oh, I might not have a business tomorrow, but I'll just post a survey online. I know I'm going to get some traffic. I might not sell a single one, but I'll just try and use it to listen to customers, potential customers, get some feedback. And that night, over 2,000 people filled in the survey with phenomenal words of support. I sold out, and I quickly realised that the public saw straight through the theatrics. And my challenge had always been, I had a product, I know the consumer gets it, but manufacturers didn't get it, retailers didn't get it, and investors didn't get it. So fortunately, that did give me a platform to get direct in front of the consumer, mums and dads, and they loved it. And that was a turning point. And a couple of weeks later, I had a meeting with John Lewis, and we rolled out into every single high street store and could not keep up with demand for the next 3 years.
Do you have a rough idea how many you think you might have sold, at least to the nearest 10,000?
We've sold over 4 million units around the world in over 100 countries.
Well, we salute your success. Let me tell our audience that we have barely in this conversation, Rob, scratched the surface of your story. Your book is called 65 Roses and a trunkie, defying the odds in life and business. It's out now. It's in hardcover and on ebook, and it's perfect lockdown reading. Rob, before we let you go, there are so many people in lockdown who may have, I don't know, conceived some wonderful business idea whilst being stuck at home. What would your words of advice be to any budding entrepreneur?
Well, lots of great ideas are going to come out of this COVID situation, and there's going to be lots of great businesses. But to run a business and get your idea all the way through to market takes a huge amount of resilience. So my learnings are, you've got to really focus on what you can control and forget about the rest, because you've got to use so much energy to overcome challenges, and you're going to get thrown so many running a business. So try and do that, and you will succeed.
Rob, you're an MBE. You're a legend too. Thank you for joining us on Talk Radio. 65 Roses and a Trunkie is out now. This is Talk Radio. Online.